We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game betting odds on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit wynnbet.com to start winning.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Tradecast on the RotoViz Radio Network via our friends over at Blue Wire. Thank you for tuning in to the show this evening. Week 10 is in the books. We're more than halfway there, Dan, and I am joined today by my good friend, who I just said his name, Dan Sanyo.
That's me. After all of the thes at the beginning of the show, I thought you were going to hit the Ohio State University, but here we are. So, yeah, interesting week. A lot of strange roster moves, but we'll talk a little bit about it as well. But kind of a week that things got a little bit more normal. Aside from the, it seems like half the league is starting quarterbacks that shouldn't even be in the NFL, which is always fun. And it's normal NFL, I suppose, for us.
Normal NFL indeed. So today we're going to start off by talking about a pair of players that went to the same college and now are on the same NFL team. We have the LSU running backs. We have, of course, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who does not exist anymore. He was supposed to be coming back from IR soon, but that may not matter due to the performance of one Daryl Williams. Daryl Williams, just over his last, let's call it, five games, we have 23.9, 8, 17, 10, and then capped it off with a 29.4 point performance against the Raiders on Sunday night with 101 receiving yards on 9 receptions, along with 43 rushing yards on the ground for one Daryl Williams. For me, I see this is the death knell in the value of one Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You can call that an overreaction, it probably is, but Daryl Williams is producing like Clyde Edwards-Helaire never has. And like there's, I don't see a reason to hand the ball off to Clyde Edwards-Helaire when you have Daryl Williams.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Williams has been scoring points, but and I'm definitely not a CEH fan. The like we've always talked about, the attraction to CEH from a fantasy perspective was because of the team that he's on, the offense that he is in. With that being said, I do think that CEH is a better between the tackles runner. I don't think Daryl Williams excels there. Now, getting him in space, like a lot of these guys, is very important. I think if they can create lanes for CEH, he will excel as a between the tackles runner. But Daryl Williams, in my opinion, as a pass catcher, is well exceeds what CEH does and can do. So while I think that they very easily could just run Daryl Williams as your feature, I really do think it'll be not necessarily a 50-50 split, but I think CEH will probably dominate early downs between the tackles once he's back. And I think Daryl Williams will dominate a lot of the work through the air, maybe third down touches, goal line type stuff, which doesn't make a ton of sense, but he's a threat in the red zone. I mean, he's got a few touchdowns on the ground, and I think only one through the air, which is a little bit surprising. But I guess last night, you know, we were, like you said, we're recording Monday night now, but last night on Sunday, we finally got to see kind of what Daryl Williams looks like when he's kind of a feature. He's always, you know, he'll get 10, 12, 15 carries, whatever, but they really took advantage of him through the air, and they just kind of made the Raiders look a bit silly.
Yeah, I don't know how much this is a comparison between the Packers defense and the Raiders defense, but those were two completely different teams, Packers to Raiders. Like, the Chiefs were abysmal and barely an NFL team against the Jordan Love-led Packers. And then, you know, looking like the Chiefs of old against the Raiders. So I don't know if that means the Packers are great or the Chiefs are bad. I mean, the Raiders are bad, or a mix of both. But as a fantasy fan, as a football fan, I am hoping we're going to see more of this Chiefs team going forward. I don't really have much Chiefs offense from the running back perspective. I'm a big fader of one CEH, but I do think that the one negative here for Daryl Williams is that CEH is expected to come back in week 11, and that will chip into his carries. Like you said, maybe the receptions will favor towards Daryl Williams, but I definitely think that his floor will precipitously fall once CEH is back in the lineup.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know how it won't, especially considering draft capital, which I know at this point in the career, the draft capital makes a little bit less of a difference, but still, when you spend a first round pick on a running back, you're going to expect to at least use him for those first 4 years. And at the beginning of this, you mentioned the LSU backs, and people are maybe curious, well, why didn't we know about Daryl Williams seeing how good he is now? Well, you have to remember, when Daryl Williams was at LSU, Darius Geis was the guy. You weren't taking touches away from Darius Geis, even though that final year for both of them, for sure Daryl Williams, Geis had 237 carries and Daryl Williams had 145. So he was definitely being used, and he was pretty good, if not better than Darius Geis in college. He's just kind of the one left by the wayside because of Darius Geis and because of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So it'll be interesting to see how all of this turns out, because I do think that Daryl Williams is a really darn good football player. I just think he struggles a little bit between the tackles, but with that offense, I mean, it's an air attack anyways. I would expect a lot of kind of how Buffalo has been, where it's 90% through the air and then you get a little bit on the ground, hope for a touchdown.
What would be your buying price in terms of picks, you know, just as a neutral observer, for Daryl Williams? In mid-second, late second, like, or is it a third or less?
Yeah, it's probably going to be that late two range. And the fear is that CH comes back and he looks at least moderately useful. But, you know, 2 months ago, Daryl Williams was completely free. You could pick him up off the waivers. You could have gotten him in the last round of your startup drafts, whatever it was. And CH was going in like the second round. So I would assume we'll see those two come closer together in mid rounds of startups. I still think CEH will end up going too high because people will always go back to the draft capital bit, but Daryl Williams definitely has proven himself. So I think if you can get him mid late second, I'd be fine with that. Maybe it's one of those where you kind of combine the pick, or as a seller, if you can combine Daryl Williams and a two and get a one, I would do that every day of the week.
Yeah, for sure. I will say, as the draft capital aficionado that I am, maybe I might test the waters on CH. Maybe I might throw a couple thirds just to see. I mean, I could get laughed out of the building and say, why are you sending me 2/3 for CEH? Probably what's going to happen. Yeah. But I think that I might get a counter of like a late second, which I might consider. You know,
for CEH or Darrell Williams?
CEH.
No way. You will not. The only counter you'll get is a late first. No one's coming off of CEH for that.
People want a first for CEH?
Well, yeah. He was a first round. In Kansas City, 100%. Let's do a bit. Pick two or three leagues. Go send offers of thirds, even offers of seconds. I guarantee you get rejected. If not,
sure.
How about this?
I'm not doubting I'll get rejected. I'm saying anyone who is asking for a first has been sniffing some glue.
Go offer a late first in any league for CEH.
I'm not going to do that.
And if you get rejected, I'll pay your kadoosh fees. Or if you get accepted, I'll pay your kadoosh fees.
Oh, sure. That doesn't help me any. Anyways, here we go. So, Chiefs, yeah. So, I'm fine with honestly going after either as a flyer. But if anyone has any sort of expensive price tag, like a mid-second for Williams or a late first for CEH, I would pass quite easily. Next, we have, I feel like every year we kind of have the, if this guy gets hurt, he's the best handcuff in the game. And pretty much that this offseason was A.J. Dillon in place of Aaron Jones. We're like, yes, he doesn't have much standalone value, which he's probably had more standalone value than many expected so far this year. He has four 10-plus point games. So that's not bad for an RB2 in A.J. Dillon. But in terms of like, okay, this guy's the smash. Like as soon as if Aaron Jones gets injured, he's a smash RB1. And he looked the part last night or yesterday afternoon with 66 rushing yards, 62 receiving yards, and 2 rushing touchdowns. So the Packers offense looking pretty decent. Obviously only scoring 17 points, but not bad. So Aaron Jones out 1 to 2 weeks. So not huge dynasty implications, but we are going to see more of AJ Dillon than we were expecting. You know, we'll see RB1 type carries and we'll see what he can do with it. I do think that there could be a selling opportunity after these 1 to 2 games. But the real question will be like, is anybody going to want to buy after these 1 to 2 games? Are they going to say, well, Aaron Jones is back, so they're back to a timeshare?
I think there's been kind of a sneaky under the radar, like move of people going and acquiring AJ Dillon. Did we really think that given the history of the Packers, at least the recent history of the Packers, that Aaron Jones was just gonna be the guy? Like, okay, it's his. I mean, Jamal Williams took carries nonstop. AJ Dillon has been kind of a thorn in the side. There's been some games where he only gets like 4 or 5 looks, but even so, those games, as when we look at these ones, obviously Aaron Jones got hurt and AJ Dillon was, you said he was good. I thought he was very mediocre. He had like 20 some carries for 60 yards, which is not good considering
volume.
You chase volume. And I actually do think AJ Dillon is probably better than Jamal Williams was. And I was a huge fan of Jamal Williams, but I kind of have always had this expectation that AJ Dillon was going to take a ton out of Aaron Jones' workload, and people just kept moving him up and moving him up and moving him up when Jamal Williams left. And I never really understood it. But Aaron Jones still has way higher upside, especially considering the red zone usage. So I think after this 2 weeks, until Aaron Jones comes back, I think if AJ Dillon puts up big numbers, you might be able to get prices for AJ Dillon that are going to be similar to those of Aaron Jones. I think his price has a real opportunity to skyrocket over these next couple of games. Especially if he looks good against the Rams. So he's got Minnesota this next week, which their defense has either been really good or really bad. And we know how Aaron Rodgers can take advantage of them. So if AJ Dillon looks the part after these next 2 games, I feel like his price is going to go way up, and whether you want to hang on to him or not, I feel like there's going to be a lot of free value there just because I don't think there's a clear-cut RB1 on this roster.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's mostly going to be a timeshare, you know, moving forward. Aaron Jones has the long-term contract. AJ Dillon has 2 more years on his rookie contract, plus the rest this year. So Yeah, not a ton of fantasy value there, but still, my original point, when one of them is injured, the other one's going to eat.
Oh, 100%. Like, just like Kansas City, given the nature of the offense, that running back position is, it's got so much value just because of the offense and what it can do. That offense is so good in the red zone, obviously, with Devontae Adams getting the majority of that work. But when you remove Robert Tonyan from that, you know, that bit, then these running backs become even more valuable when you take away that big that big red zone target. So it'll be interesting to see the breakdown once Aaron Jones comes back. I have a fear that it's going to be that 50-50 or 60-40. It should still be in favor of Jones considering the contract, but with these Packers, you know, they just like to keep us wondering.
And now let's move on to our next topic. And we have a bit of breaking news, Dan. Brian Edwards is a listener of the Dynasty Tradecast. I don't know if you ever knew that. we found that out because at the end of last week's podcast, we're like, where is Brian Edwards? Does Brian Edwards exist? Is he an actual football player? I thought he would have all this opportunity. Yada, yada, yada. Well, he decided prior to Monday Night Football starting that he would be the number 8 scoring wide receiver on the week with 17.8 PPR points, 3 catches for 88 yards, and the touchdown. So, still not quite the volume I would expect from the number 1 wide receiver in an offense that has no weapons. Hunter Renfrow is a pain in the butt. But at least it's not a bagel, not a zero. Congrats, Brian Edwards, on your solid fantasy week.
It's pretty wild when you look at the breakdown, too, of targets. Like, obviously, we expect Darren Waller to probably get the lion's share of the targets in that offense. Well, he only had, I shouldn't say only. He had 7 last night. And Hunter Renfrow led the team with 9. That should never be the case. Josh Jacobs had 5. Then you get to Brian Edwards with his measly 4, and he turned him into 3 for 88 and 1. Strange how you throw it to your good players and good things happen. I mean, this has to just be a Vegas thing. I don't know if they just don't like him, or maybe it's a car bit. He doesn't want to push the ball downfield and use his big best wide receiver that he's got, and instead he'd use his Binky and Darren Waller. I'm not sure. Hunter Renfrow, isn't it? If you roster him and you can sell him, please do so we can stop doing this. Maybe if he starts moving off some rosters, the Raiders will be like, hey, we should try this Brian Edwards guy. Maybe the Raiders will start listening to the podcast and figure it out instead of just Brian Edwards.
Okay, so I was slightly joking about the breaking news for the Odell thing, but as we're recording, I do have some breaking news. Odell Beckham, with his, route running that caused a stir in Cleveland, it's already causing a stir in Los Angeles because he changed his route and Stafford threw a pick. So, so going the Odell Beckham regime, at least in the first quarter of Monday night, going very well for the Los Angeles Rams. All right, let's go to our next topic, which is going to be another player. A player who has returned to where his glory days. I don't know what the beat of that song is. Cam Newton has returned to the Carolina Panthers. He, on his first 2 snaps, Dan, he scored a touchdown on both of them, one on the ground and one through the air. Didn't get much action elsewhere, mostly because, you got to learn a playbook in 4 days, and that's kind of hard to do. But it was announced by Matt Rhule that as long as Cam's comfortable, he will be starting the following week. So this is going to go back to Cam just a few years ago, that I think this is going to be very good for fantasy and probably not that great from an NFL perspective. I think that Cam is going to position himself with DJ Moore, with Robbie Anderson, to be, a mid QB2, so a very solid option in Superflex the rest of the way. Unfortunately, I dropped all my Cam and my Superflex, and when the news dropped, I looked to see all my leagues. All the Superflex shares were already picked up, so now I have several 1QB Cam shares.
Yeah, I struggle with this one because I was a huge fan of Cam, but we also have to realize that 2015 is never occurring again. That was a
right,
unicorn.
That's not
Cam
what the
Newton.
Price is. The price is like a late second.
I understand. But if you read Twitter, like the rest of everybody, everyone's like, oh, my God, he's back. Like, look at that. He threw 4 passes, had 8 yards. great, really good stats. He had 3 carries for 14 yards. Not good. This isn't the Cam that we're used to. His arm is still dead. This is terrible for DJ Moore. Who cares about Robbie Anderson? He had 1 catch for 1 yard and 1 touchdown. Really cool. Like that. This is horrendously awful for Christian McCaffrey, in my opinion. It's we've officially arrived in Vulture Town. Cam Newton's going to have 17 rushing touchdowns and negative 18 yards. I get it, but I don't get it. This will be the one and only compliment I will ever give Sam Darnold. So everybody get your tape recorders ready. Sam Darnold is better than Cam Newton. This doesn't give anything to the Panthers in any sort of way. I don't think it's good for fantasy.
Bad for the NFL.
I don't think it's good for NFL. I don't think it's good for fantasy either, unless you're just chasing touchdowns, which is what it will be.
Sure, but chasing touchdowns fine.
Right, but 0 yards and a touchdown. So we're hoping for like 6 or 10 points, because he's not. I don't see a way he's going to have multiple touchdowns through the air or on the ground in a weekly basis, because I don't see how this offense moves down the field with him under center. I think they could with Darnold move up and down the field, because we've seen that offense be okay. I don't think Cam's got it anymore. I really hope he does. I hope he proves me wrong, but he can't scramble the way he could. He doesn't have the arm that he used to. We haven't seen any signs of that arm in like 4 years. So I'm out on Cam. I'm kind of out on the Panthers as well. I would be buying low on DJ Moore at this stage, because I feel like a lot of people maybe think the same, kind of along the same lines as me. And I think you kind of just have to keep Christian McCaffrey in limbo, because of the passes that Cam can complete, the 3 yarders to Christian McCaffrey where he can take him to the house or he can take him for 15 or 20, those are going to still be pretty valuable. And obviously running that read option and doing what they're going to do on the ground, I still think McCaffrey is going to be McCaffrey. But I fear the touchdown vultures and the red zone upside for McCaffrey.
Yeah, and you were talking about, before we head into the next half of the show, you were talking about DJ Moore with Cam and without him. The RotoViz Game Splits app, in his in-split with Cam Newton for 16 games, 11.04 PPR points. And out of that split, 39 games. I'm surprised how many games DJ Moore has played without Cam Newton at this stage. But 39 games for DJ Moore without Cam Newton and 14.66 PPR points, so about 3.5 points per game more. So it is a negative for Cam, especially because some of those 16 might have been like with like a healthy shouldered Cam. But, you know, that shoulder doesn't exist anymore. So if you want more great tools and stuff like the RotoViz Game Splits app, make sure to go to rotoviz.com and use RV Radio 2021 for a 10% discount. Gives you access to all of our content and tools, all the tools that you could need to be a fantasy WINNER and support SUPPORT, your favorite podcast host, Nathan Powell and Dan Sanyo.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's get back into the show. We have one Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence, kids, has a 2.7% interception percentage. Not that great. He has a 5.3 AYA, very bad. And he has 8 touchdowns to 9 interceptions, also what the kids call not good. So the question here is, how much of this is that the Jaguars are an incompetent franchise? How much of this is that Lawrence isn't as good as expected? Or how much of this is the Jaguars being so incompetent that we're unsure about the career of one Trevor Lawrence?
I think the last option is to be completely honest with you, the last option is probably the only thing that makes sense.
But given... I will say they did try to help him a little. Like, they signed Marvin Jones and they have DJ Chark and LaVisca Chenault. They tried. It just isn't work. Like, obviously DJ Chark has been out the whole year, but they need a lot more, particularly.
Well, I mean, you look at the college career, and obviously when you're at Clemson and you have all those weapons around you, it's a little bit different. And like you mentioned, DJ Chark is out. You know, Marvin Jones has been okay. He's definitely not the Marvin Jones of old. LaVisca Chenault has been an utter disaster. That backfield has been abysmal. You know, we kind of hoped and thought that maybe James Robinson would continue doing James Robinson things, but that hasn't exactly been the case. The Jags are... a disaster, you know. You alluded to the interception percentage and the eight touchdowns to nine interceptions. I will say Lawrence has been protecting the ball a lot better over the last month and a half. The first 3 weeks of the season, he threw, I think, like eight, maybe seven or eight of those nine interceptions in the first 3 weeks. So over the last six games or so, he's only thrown two interceptions. But the upside is severely limited because he's also not throwing touchdowns. He's got 3 touchdowns over that same span and only one 300-yard game to speak of, and that was against Miami, which, I mean, that's a halfway decent team to throw for 300 yards against. Now, the weapons are an issue. The play calling's an issue. Urban Meyer is a massive issue.
But a lot of the things that you're saying aren't going to change, which is why it leads to the point of tough. Your answer in the at the beginning.
Yeah, it's definitely unfortunate, and it's kind of tough to predict at this stage because we certainly aren't seeing the Trevor Lawrence from Clemson. I haven't even really seen, you know, a little snippets of it. I've seen more from Mac Jones, to be quite honest, and Mac Jones is kind of doing what I would have expected Trevor Lawrence to do. Now, I do anticipate a huge sophomore leap coming out of Trevor Lawrence for Jacksonville, but that's going to require them to upgrade their offensive line, get DJ Chark healthy, get LaVisca Chenault back on the path that he was on as a rookie. Hopefully Travis Etienne shows up and is ready to go, and we see what we saw at Clemson from him as well. So there's an immense amount of potential here, but the Jags just are so bad and just out of sorts that I'm not overly optimistic. I fear for a lot of these assets, and specifically Trevor Lawrence. You're going to have a real opportunity to buy low after the season, or even right now. I know a lot of folks are down on him. I think we're both down on him. It's a tough spot. This is why bad teams stay bad, because you go in, you try to, you know, get this great elite quarterback, which he was in college. He had everything we could possibly wanted, but then you just ruin him at the pro level. There's so much potential just being tossed away. So it's a tough one. I feel like I'll probably be buying a little bit just to see, test the waters. And
I think we're a couple weeks early on the buy low. I think that it has to get a little bit worse than it has been before the Lawrence drafters, who, you know, obviously paid a fortune to get him, you know, even think about, you know, moving off of him. So unless you're like making like a lateral, like age move, like a Dak for Lawrence plus a piece or something like that, I think you're not likely to get Lawrence off of their manager.
Well, I would never do that. I would never do a Dak for Lawrence, but I would do like Russell Wilson for Trevor Lawrence or Aaron Rodgers for Trevor Lawrence. I feel like you have similar long-term upside.
That still requires a plus, though.
I don't know. I feel like you could get one for the other.
I mean, definitely Rodgers does. Rodgers is probably like at least Rodgers and a first for Lawrence.
Right, but even though we know that Rodgers is moving on from Green Bay after the season, there's potentially greener pastures. You know, we saw Tom Brady. We thought it was it for him in New England, and then he came back guns a-blazing in Tampa, and there's that outside chance for Rodgers as well. So I think if you can get one of the older, unless you are contending, but the ability to move a contending asset for an underwhelming asset that, you know, was once thought of as elite, I feel like that's a real easy move to make, and some people might be more apt to do it at the stage.
You know, general announcement, if you can trade Jalen Hurts for Trevor Lawrence, go do that yesterday.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Yes, please, God.
Because according to the ADP I'm looking at right now, Jalen Hurts is QB7 and Trevor Lawrence is QB11. So
put a 2 in front of the Jalen Hurts number and it's closer.
All righty. Let's move on to, we're going to finish off the rest of this episode with some Patriots. You mentioned Mac Jones just a bit ago. He has been the best rookie quarterback. He has a 7.1 AYA. He has 13 touchdowns to 7 interceptions, 69% completion percentage. Mac Jones has been like, you know, the quote unquote, like high floor guy. Like he's been high floor with a high ceiling on top. So I'm trying not to panic on Justin Fields, but also I think I might have Mac as QB too.
I got to be honest. I think I might have Mac as QB one in this, at this stage. You know, we haven't seen anything from Trey Lance. I still don't really think he's the guy. I feel like he's the athlete that plays quarterback. Justin Fields, I still have faith in, but also the tie to Chicago and Matt Nagy is not a good one. The way that offense operates and their inability to use Justin Fields' strengths aside from like four plays a game is incredible. The Patriots have figured out how to make Mac good. We knew Mac was the floor quarterback here. He had the highest floor arguably out of any quarterback. A lot of people would have argued that was Trevor Lawrence. We knew Mac Jones was pro ready, played in a pro offense in college, and he can make all of the throws. He wasn't exciting. There's nothing exciting about the guy. But he makes the throws, he makes the plays, and he went to arguably the safest place he could possibly go considering the history here. Obviously, with Tom Brady, it's a little bit different, but we know Belichick is there to win. We know Josh McDaniels is a pretty darn good play caller. The one fear is the weapons around him, which he has pretty similar weapons to Trevor Lawrence, aside from maybe a good defense and a moderate offensive line. But he's making it look much, much easier in New England than Trevor Lawrence is in Jacksonville. So I think they'll continue to limit Mac as far as pure volume. I don't think we're going to see a lot of those 50 attempt games, but I think we'll see plenty of mid 30s and 40s. And the touchdown upside's there. That offense, you know, the scheme, is, like we know with Josh McDaniels, is good enough for them to compete and win. So I just feel like Mac's upside and his floor are just kind of a continued line that have moved upwards. I don't feel like they're very far apart at all. I just feel like he's got such a significant floor over the rest of these rookie quarterbacks that for me, he's almost got to be QB1.
Yeah. I mean, I still, even though I just spent a few minutes bashing on Trevor Lawrence, I still think that the upside, you know, upside of Trevor Lawrence is Andrew Luck and John Elway and da 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 da. And I don't think that is quite there with Mac Jones. But we'll see. We'll see where he's at the rest of the season. But I do think that, you know, if we're doing a, you know, a re-rookie draft, that there isn't a quarterback. There isn't Fields or Lance over Mac Jones right now.
No way. No,
or, of course, Zach Wilson.
he could go undrafted. Yeah, I think Mac, you know, you do the redraft bit and you're probably trading out of one to let somebody else take Lawrence, picking at 2, 3, or 4 and taking Mac Jones when Mac Jones and Zach Wilson, or I mean, Zach Wilson was going way too high before, but you could have gotten Mac Jones in like the late first in some spots for, in super flex leagues. Now you do those, you know, those redrafts and you'd be hard pressed to get him after like 103, maybe 104 with Jamar Chase and Najee Harris in there.
Next, we'll move on to the running back in the Patriots backfield. We have Ramondre Stevenson. He got his opportunity because Damian Harris was out with an injury, and Ramondre Stevenson did what the kids call capitalized with a 27 PPR point game. And one of his knocks coming out of school was the lack of receptions. Granted, it was a 4-catch-for-14 receiving yard game. So maybe there's a reason why he doesn't have those receiving chops, but he showed at least he knows how to catch a football, which is a positive. And I kind of saw this as a, you know, range of outcome with him being like a mid third round rookie pick. Like, this guy is going to get an opportunity at some point, and he got it, and he capitalized with it. So he was a fourth round pick, so a little bit lower capital than Damian Harris had. But I think that at this stage with their contracts and what it is, I would say at the very least, it's a 50-50 split the remainder of the year, Harris Stevenson.
See, I just don't see Stevenson anywhere near the talent level of Damian Harris. You know, and the draft thing is whatever, but Stevenson's your between the tackle guy. You mentioned he didn't get used in the passing game, and obviously with 4 catches for 14 yards, that's not exactly exciting. We know Damian Harris can do absolutely all of it. The big issue here in the history of the Patriots is we never know who's going to get all of the carries. For a little while there, when Stevenson was either out or just not really up to par in the offense, we knew it was going to be Harris. You know, James White hasn't been healthy. They got rid of Rex Burkhead, the whole bit. J.J. Taylor's irrelevant. It's kind of gotten to the stage now where they don't really have all of the mouths that they had at one point where they could throw any one of the 4 or 5 of them out there and all do the same thing. I don't think Ramondre Stevenson can do what Damian Harris can do, especially through the air. But depending on the scheme and depending on the game plan, he's definitely going to go get more looks. Absolutely, when they're running between the tackles, but you know that Cleveland wasn't exactly potent on defense yesterday. So Stevenson kind of got a freebie, if you will. He did look pretty good for the most part, especially between the tackles. But I do still think this is Damian Harris's backfield. But like you said, I mean, he's going to get some work. He earned some work because of that performance. I just don't think it'll be enough to like really vault his value.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it several times today. I think it's enough to dampen my love for Harris. I was a huge Harris guy because he was never valued as high as his draft capital was, and he was honestly having his best year from an NFL and fantasy perspective in 2021 before this injury. So, yeah, I think that more so than anything, I think it dampens my love for Harris rather than excites me for Stevenson. Because I don't think you can start Stevenson if Harris is back in the lineup. And I think you're probably starting Harris if Harris is back in the lineup. So I think that's at the end of the day, that's what it does. It just dampens the ceiling of Damian Harris.
And the big fear here for both of these guys is the target volume through the air. I don't really think either one of them are going to get enough work where we can vault either one of them up higher than kind of where they've been, even if they are playing well, especially considering you've got Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, two guys that are just going to absolutely consume those short area and mid-range targets that running backs would normally get. Damian Harris only has 13 targets on the season. Ramondre Stevenson, I don't think is honestly too far off of that from what he has played. And neither one of them are really doing a lot with their targets. Yeah, Ramondre Stevenson actually has the exact same number of targets that Damian Harris has, which is pretty surprising, to be completely honest. I will say that Harris has looked really good between the tackles. We just need to get the running backs, I guess, more involved through the passing attack. But I guess that'll probably come with time.
All right, and we'll wrap up the show with the New England Patriots pass catchers, highlighted by the fact that Jacoby Myers, after previously holding the record for most receiving yards by a person who had not scored a receiving touchdown, Jacoby Myers found his way into the end zone at the end of a blowout. The entire Patriots team like went from the sideline to the back of the end zone to celebrate with him. It was a very nice moment. But Myers has been an interesting fantasy asset. Kendrick Bourne was the highest scoring fantasy asset of the day for the Patriots receivers. But I do think the Myers is the more interesting long-term asset. He's not going to be a ceiling play. He's not going to be a floor play. But I think he's like an interesting like wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5 to have on your team. That's just going to be like, he's going to be fine. Like, he's going to probably and at the stage of where he is, he's probably going to get you like a 4 catches for 50 yard type game, like most days than not.
Yeah, I mean, that pretty much is his floor. It was weird too after like the first month of the season, give or take. He was averaging like 10 targets a game, and doing okay with them. Obviously, with new rookie Mac Jones still trying to figure the NFL out, the passing attack wasn't exactly potent, so there wasn't really any big numbers coming from that. But his first four games, he came out with 6 catches, 4 catches, 9 catches, and 8 catches, but never averaging over 10 yards per catch. So we kind of, we know where all of that work is happening. And then, over the last month and a half / 2 months, give or take, he's just kind of been there. The targets haven't been overwhelming. We're looking at between like 5 and 8, maybe 9, but it's just not, it's not really desirable to me to chase 4 catches for 50 yards.
Sure, you're not trading for Jacoby Myers.
No.
I'm just saying, like, it's not a bad guy to have on your bench. Like, oh, if you get a last minute like scratch due to an injury, or you're killed with bye weeks, like he's not a bad, like it's not always bad to have a decent floor guy on your team that isn't really ever exciting to start.
Yeah, it's just one of those strange ones where the clear-cut wide receiver one on a team is just not desirable at all. He's fine to have, but no one's going out and like, Aguilar, I'll trade a bunch for you. Well, and even Nelson Aguilar has been almost, I mean, he and Kendrick Bourne have kind of been just the whoever shows up that day is going to get some looks.
They are back-to-back in points, 113.10 for Bourne and 110.10 for Myers.
And they're almost identical target-wise as well. I believe Aguilar has 46, Kendrick Bourne has 43, Hunter Henry has 42, Jonnu Smith has 34. So those four are kind of are going for the same piece of the pie. And then Jacoby Myers has 76 targets. So, when you're almost doubling some of these guys, or you have 30 more targets over your wide receiver two in the offense, you would certainly expect more, but the places where Jacoby is winning aren't exactly conducive to big numbers for yardage or really in touchdowns as either, because it's kind of the Jarvis Landry bit. Everybody, he's the best, running back playing wide receiver, whatever, getting 8 catches for 13 yards, but never scoring because Jarvis Landry for the longest time just couldn't get into the end zone either. So I don't think he's quite on Jarvis Landry's level, but for the time being, I mean, he's the top guy in New England. So there's maybe something there. It's just a really hard spot to buy.
All right. And of course, Hunter Henry, seven receiving touchdowns through 9 games. So apparently he's going to be the touchdown vulture for the New England Patriots, along with Damian Harris, once he gets those red zone work as well. So, any last words on the Patriots or week 10, Dan?
No, it's a weird spot. I don't know that necessarily any of the assets are buys outside of Mac Jones, but maybe if you could get Damian Harris for a discount, I maybe would try. I don't think you're getting Ramondre Stevenson for market value after that game, and I'm not really sure that that's justified, but it's a weird spot. And last but certainly not least, RIP N'Keal Harry.
Oh, my goodness. Laquan Treadwell and N'Keal Harry have taken at least 6 years off my life.
Those two are that Spider-Man meme where they're pointing at each other.
All righty. That should wrap us up for this evening. Now I'm going to go cry in a bowl of cereal or something. that should wrap us up for this week. We'll talk to you guys next week. Kadoosh!